God Ibrahim on the ground. God, what are the latest developments?
Yes, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians have survived another wet and flooding night following the rainfall, the heavy rainfall that flooded all many areas across the Gaza Strip following the Byron storm that have already been long warned about, and the civil defense workers and the Gaza media office have been already sounding the alarm about. So the situation on the ground is really very disastrous and catastrophic for hundreds of thousands of families who are now totally exposed because of the damage of their tents encampments across the Gaza Strip. And according to Gaza media office, 90% of the tents here in the Gaza Strip have been completely soaked and damaged by the heavy rainfall that started 3 days ago and is continuous in many areas across the Gaza Strip until this moment. So it is very disastrous for many of the families, and it is very fatal actually. Since the Byron storm started until this moment, we are talking about at least 14 Palestinians killed as a result of the storm, or as a result of being completely exposed to the bad weather conditions. 3 children actually died because of hypothermia. The last was Hadil Hamdan, a 9-year-old girl who succumbed to the severe cold in the southern parts of Khan Yunis city. Previous to this, another Palestinian child, Rahab Abu Jazza, the 8-month-old child, also succumbed to cold and hypothermia, and she was announced dead at Nasser Complex lately yesterday. Amidst this, another catastrophe is unfolding across the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian civil defense has been receiving distress calls from across the Gaza Strip about many residential buildings collapsing on the heads of their residents, killing at least 13 Palestinians. The last of these collapses was in a Sheikh Ridwan neighborhood, in which a family home or a home belonging to Nassar family collapsed on the heads of its residents, killed at least 2 of the same family and injured many. And the search is still underway for another missing man under the rubble of the same collapsed building. So this is very repetitive, and this has been happening since the beginning of the storm until this moment, and it is causing many fears among the Palestinians, as the storm does not only and not directly affect those displaced in the tents only, but also many or hundreds of families, those who are still in the partially bombed or the partially damaged houses across the Gaza Strip.
Thank you so much, Gada, for the update. Gada Ibrahim joining us from Deir al-Balah. The Israeli occupation forces and armed settlers have intensified their attacks against Palestinians across the occupied West Bank, resulting in injuries and widespread destruction. Palestinian sources have said Israeli forces raided Tubas, Bethlehem, Ramallah and Aria, vandalizing homes, shops and other property. In Shokba, west of Ramallah, a young Palestinian was wounded after the Israeli forces stormed the village, firing live rounds and tear gas. Confrontations were reported also between the Israeli forces and Palestinians in Tamun, Tuku, Al-Mughayr, Silmad and Akabat Jaber camp. Since the Israeli genocide in Gaza began in 2023, more than 1,000 Palestinians have been killed and over 20,000 others abducted in the West Bank. Earlier we were joined by our West Bank correspondent Naka Hamad for an update on the latest Israeli atrocities across the occupied territory. Let us take a listen.
Let me start from the village of Al-Mughayr to the northeast of occupied Ramallah, where the famous family of Abu Hammam, whom we have been covering their story now for almost 2 years, they have been clinging on to their land, staying but do not move and do not subdue to the Israeli settlers' attacks. Now this family stands alone in front of the settlers and in front of the Israeli forces, because the area is considered to be a closed military zone. No one can reach towards that family, no matter what the settler do to that family. No ambulance, no support, no media can even reach towards that family in the southern villages of Nablus, speaking of Aqraba, precisely in the area of Jabal Karkafa. This area that area in front of the continuous settler attacks. Also in Beta, to the south of Nablus, the same situation. The Israeli settlers have attacked the Palestinians over there. The Israeli forces combed them to Al-Amhari, a refugee camp, and into Qalandia, a refugee camp south of Ramallah, north of occupied Al-Quds, and attacked many villages in the prominence of Ramallah, like Ain Yabrut and Bitin to the east of Ramallah. Let us go towards the north a little bit, where the Israeli forces have attacked Tammun to the south of Tubat.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has warned that Israel's decision to legalize 19 new settlements in the occupied West Bank marks a dangerous escalation. The legalization of the 19 settlements was announced by the Israeli Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich. Hamas condemned the move as part of a wider project of annexation and Judaization of occupied territories. In a press statement, Hamas said the move reflects the extremist nature of the Israeli regime, which treats Palestinian land as colonial spoils. The movement stressed that settlement expansion violates international law and UN resolutions, warning it aims to isolate Palestinian towns and villages and push communities towards displacement. Hamas urged the international community, the United Nations, and human rights organizations to take responsibility and act to stop settlement growth and hold the Israeli leaders accountable. Clashes between Thailand and Cambodian forces continue despite claims by U.S. President that the two sides have agreed to halt hostilities. Trump has said that the two Southeast Asian neighbors would cease all shooting on Friday and return to a peace deal signed in October. Cambodia, however, reported fresh Thai airstrikes on Saturday, accusing Thailand of using F-16 jets to drop bombs. Thailand's prime minister says a ceasefire would only be possible once Cambodia withdraws all its troops and removes the landmines it has planted. At least 21 people have been killed and hundreds more wounded in 6 days of clashes. Around 700,000 people have also been displaced along the border. The conflict centers on disputed ownership of centuries-old temples. Barry Grossman is an international lawyer who earlier joined us from Bali, Indonesia. He believes the interference of external actors in the conflict between Thailand and Cambodia would only worsen the situation.
Certainly, neither side is being completely honest, and it's kind of odd, really, that there still are no observers on the ground, because what we have is sort of conflicting allegations always about who fired first, and I'm inclined to believe the Cambodians myself. But the idea that Trump can just make a few phone calls and make it all go around shows how delusional he is. Just out to fill in his bingo card so he can claim having stopped another war. It's simply not going to happen. In fact, the current leadership of Thailand made that perfectly clear, that they're not really willing to discuss a ceasefire, and the terms that are set for discussing a ceasefire are far less than clear. And I think the best thing that can happen really is for the international community to stay out of it. Typically, it's those foreign-imposed solutions that aggravate the situation. This whole thing arises from the colonial period and actions that were taken by colonial rulers. And there's no reason for them to get involved again when I think the Thais and the Cambodians are ultimately perfectly capable of dealing with this on their own.
The admiral in charge of U.S. forces in the Latin America and Caribbean, who has been critical of U.S. strikes on alleged drug boats in the region, has retired 2 years ahead of schedule. Admiral Alvin Halsey has reportedly had disagreements with U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth of operation in the region. He had earlier voiced concerns about the legality of the U.S. military's lethal strikes against alleged drug trafficking boats. Since September, the U.S. has deployed more than 15,000 troops, warships and fighter jets in the Caribbean under the pretext of fighting drug traffickers. Venezuela, however, says the military buildup is aimed at toppling the Venezuelan government to gain control of its oil resources. The strikes on boats have killed at least 87 people so far. The U.S. Congress is now scrutinizing the boat attacks, including one that killed two survivors clinging to the wreckage of an earlier strike. Then let's talk to Greg Simons, Associate Professor of Uppsala University, joining us from Istanbul now. Very good to have you on the programme, Mr. Simons. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this situation. What strategic or political factors do you believe within the US Southern Command and the Trump administration influenced Admiral Holtz's decision to retire early?
Well, I think oddly that it demonstrates that there are still some high-ranking officers within the US military that have some kind of moral or ethical compass, because they obviously saw that this was contradictory, it's an illegal order. Not only is it violating international law, it's violating humanitarian law, and it was not something that could sit with his conscience. And of course, when you have someone as psychopathic as Hegseth in charge, who was a much lower ranking officer than Holsey, who is just a war hawk and believes that somehow this is going to be a cakewalk. They go in with the justification and pretext of narco-terrorism, steal the oil. I mean, it's as clear as day. And there are some people in the US military that still stand for ethics and principles, which is a good sign, I suppose, even if those in political control absolutely have nothing like this.
Now, Professor Simons, how do you believe his departure is going to now affect US military operations and partnerships in Latin America and the Caribbean, especially amid scrutiny of recent boat strikes?
I think this removes obstacles for their warmongering and so forth, because, yeah, I mean, he was obviously some person who would not bow to political pressure and was felt compelled to resign. And, of course, there'll be those in Latin America watching this. They don't want to be objects of U.S. Imperialism and usury of their resources. I mean, you got a big sea change in Latin America. I mean, you got a socialist president in Colombia. I mean, what would happen is that if Trump is stupid and arrogant enough to believe that he will get away with it, this will unite Latin America like nothing before. This will be like what Iraq, the U.S. Unprovoked and illegal invasion and occupation of Iraq did to the Middle East. This is going to do to Latin America.
Pleasure to talk to you, Professor Simons. Greg Simons, Associate Professor of Uppsala University, joining us from Istanbul. Hundreds of people have held a protest in the Canadian city of Montreal against the cancellation of a program which guarantees citizenship for skilled migrants. Demonstrators gathered outside the Immigration Ministry's office, holding placards and banners calling for the return of the PEQ program. Some protesters say the cancellation of the program will put the lives of thousands of immigrants in jeopardy. The PEQ was an immigration program that allowed temporary workers to apply for permanent residency. The government says the program had certain flaws and will be replaced with a more rigorous process aimed at curbing illegal migration. Hundreds of pro-Palestinian activists march in the Italian city of Bologna ahead of a basketball match between a local team and Israel's Hapoel Tel Aviv. They called on sports teams and governing bodies to take a stand over Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza. The protest, organized by the Palestinian youth movement, moved through the city under heavy police supervision. Marchers carried placards and Palestinian flags, set off smoke flares, and briefly blocked traffic near the city center. Police sealed off several streets and later intervened to disperse the crowd. Since the start of the Israeli genocidal war in Gaza in October 2023, activists around the world have criticized the participation of Israeli teams in international competitions, urging sports bodies to suspend them.
And that is a wrap for this hour's news bulletin. Thank you so much for staying with us.
comes from the root word wakala. Wakala means...
Today, I'd like to read to you an excerpt from...
Allah is the unique Arabic name.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decreed.
His decree, though...
This is Foresight, a program on how to worship Allah. Today's tip, the tranquility brought about by ubudiyah, the worship, the servitude, and the obedience to Allah. Welcome back, dear friends. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about the tranquility that comes about via ubudiyah, the worship, the servitude, and the obedience to the Almighty Allah. Exalted and glorified is He. So, you know, in the modern era that we live in, we find that stress, anxiety, depression, frustration, anger, all of these vices, unfortunately, are prevalent among society. Now, one of the reasons why these things have become so prevalent among society and have become so prevalent among people is because of the systems that we live in. The systems that we live in, for the most part, they are non-divine systems, and they are systems that are not, you know, created or made in order to help an individual grow psychologically and spiritually. Matter of fact, the only reason that these systems, you know, the only purpose of these systems, is that they want to make money, or they want to develop the society again in order to make money, or it is all about power and status and position and these kind of things. And so because these systems are based upon these vices and the ultimate goal is for a certain group of individuals to reach, you know, the peak of a certain vice, for example, greed. So what ends up happening is in order to reach that ultimate peak of that vice, what they end up doing is they end up misusing and mistreating and taking advantage of and abusing the common masses. And so that is why you find that these systems inherently do not care about the psychological or spiritual condition of the people. They could care less, you know, if the people suffer. For them, all that is important is power and money and wealth and, you know, greed and these kind of things. So what that results in, of course, is the common masses being taken advantage of, and that, of course, results in the suffering of the common masses, and that suffering is intimately connected to stress and anxiety and depression and these kind of ills that many people across the world are facing. So I guess if we reverse the equation, it is because we live in societies that the systems are not catered toward humanity. So, for example, the pure Muhammadan Islam, of course, is specifically catered to help the psychological and spiritual growth of every single human being. And so any system that is based upon the pure Muhammadan Islam will and should cater to and help and strengthen and support the psychological and spiritual needs of a human being. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
Today's question asks, why do Muslims pray? One of the most important rulings in Islam is the daily prayer that Muslims must partake in. Maybe you have seen Muslims in large groups say prayer together on TV. You might think it looks a little weird because there is so much action involved in prayer. Why don't Muslims just clasp their hands together, become reverent, and speak their prayers silently? Why must there be a loud call to prayer and a set time for these prayers to be said in? This is because Muslims all around the world pray the same prayer, in the same way, and at the same times. In total, there are 5 separate prayers that Muslims recite in Arabic. This is so that there can be conformity for all prayers said. But the true beauty of the prayer lies in the meaning, and so many Muslims choose to look up the translation of the prayer in their own language, so that they truly know what they are reciting. The reason for the actual prayer is so that Muslims always focus on being kind and doing the right thing, no matter the circumstances. In Islam, it is believed that the world is a testing ground for humans, in which they have to always choose for the right over the wrong. It is also believed that humans, after they die and on Judgment Day, will be judged based on their actions on earth. The prayer, therefore, acts as a sort of shield against wrongdoings that might tempt the people. They help remind people that their life on earth is short and serve as a means to put life in perspective. Think of it this way. Let's say you are sitting in an exam at school. Initially, you know that this is an exam and that you have to do your best in order to pass with a good grade. Throughout the exam, however, you also have the teacher supervising you and also a clock to tell you how much more time you have left. The teacher and the clock both reinforce the fact in your mind that you are taking an exam so that you do not slack off, dawdle, or cheat. The Muslim daily prayers serve the same purpose. They allow you to connect with God on several occasions throughout the day. They also help you remember that you are on earth for a short period of time and that you are responsible for your actions at all times. Now imagine during your exam, your teacher would not be there to supervise and there would be no means to tell the time during your exam. Would you still be trying as hard to finish your exam well? Or would you start talking with your classmates, cheat, or even take out your sandwich and indulge because you think you have the time to do so? Without daily prayers, Muslims would have a much harder time focusing on their actual purpose in life. They would not strive to be the best version of themselves that they could be and would indulge in the non-essential things in life. So why not try praying once in a while? Try taking a minute or two, a couple times a day, just to focus on a connection with the Creator.
Welcome back, dear friends. So we were talking a little bit about how ubudiyah, the worship and the servitude and the obedience to Allah, is a source of tranquility. So now when we kind of talked a little bit as a fundamental introduction to the subject by talking about the systems and how they promote stress and anxiety and depression and the ills that are within these categories. Now, we find that the Holy Quran has very beautifully said that the hearts find rest, تطمئن القلوب, in Allah's remembrance. So this is a very beautiful statement, it's very profound, and this is one of the, you know, curing, miraculous prescriptions before all of the stress and anxiety and depression and anger that human beings across the world are facing. You know, when we look at, for example, the people of Palestine, the people of Palestine in the last 2 years or so have faced an incredibly horrible and atrocious and shocking genocide. And it continues to the present day. You know, in the summers, these poor individuals are dying from the heat. And in the, you know, winter, they are faced with rains and flooding of their tents, incredibly, you know, cold weather while they are living in tents, along with, of course, you know, the basic civilian infrastructure that has been destroyed, basic facilities, basic needs. They are not able to meet those. And, you know, when you look, for example, into the starvation issue, lack of food, a lack of fuel, and of course the death and the murder of their loved ones, their parents, their brothers and sisters, their grandparents, their children, their grandchildren, their neighbors, all being killed and murdered, you know, for over 2 years nonstop. When you look at these individuals and you speak with them, one of the things that is very highlighted and it is very prominent is their tranquility. Yes, they are grieving. Yes, they are sad. Yes, they are suffering. Yes, they are facing trials and tribulations beyond imagination. Yes, you know, there are calamities that are befalling them, but still you will see that they have a sort of tranquility. And when you listen to what they say, they will always say, praise be to Allah. They will always say, Allah has the best of protectors, Allah has the best of witnesses, Allah has the best of helpers, Allah has the best of supporters, Allah will take our revenge, Allah will save us. Hence, you see, it is this remembrance that they have and their constant remembrance of the Almighty Allah which has brought them the tranquility to be able to overcome all of the anxiety and stress and depression and trials and tribulations that they are facing. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Foresight. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
What about you? IRIB English Radio.
injured their body organs, such as kidneys, hearts, and eyes, that are meant for transplantation are stored. And what happens to them in the interim that they wait for a new home? In this episode, our story begins where technology becomes the guardian of human life, from the coldest temperatures to the warmest hopes, from small laboratories to grand national projects. Join us on a journey to the world of Danish Pajuhishefaj, where Iranian innovation speaks the language of life and saving lives, and a journey to the place where human organs are stored at 86 degrees below zero. Danish Pajuhishefaj Company is among the oldest and one of the pioneering companies in Iran that manufactures equipment for storing plasma, blood products, body organs, and tissues. It has been beating at the heart of Iran's biomedical industry for over two decades. Its name synonymous with trust and innovation.
Our company was founded in Tehran in 1995. The goal of establishing this company was to manufacture medical and laboratory equipment related to blood banks and the blood transfusion organization. We realized that the equipment used by the blood transfusion organization wasn't anything extraordinarily complex. This complex was being imported from abroad. In any case, we began designing, drafting plans, and carrying out the work. Given that I'm a mechanical design engineer myself, specializing in solid mechanics, we embarked on this project. Along with my brother, who had some information due to his involvement with the blood transfusion organization and was very curious about how these devices were built, we started this venture under these circumstances. We began from a small office in Tehran and approached the blood transfusion organization. At that time, we took our designs and ideas, built a small prototype, showed it to them, and they trusted us, entering into a contract with us. This effort has led us to where we are today. We are now proud to say that Danish Pajuhan Company has manufactured close to 20,000 units of various models of blood bank refrigerators for storing blood bags, platelet incubators, plasma storage freezers, and the A1 cell culture incubator, and a minus 80 degrees centigrade ultra-low temperature freezers for preserving tissues and bodily organs, which are present in most research centers across Iran. It is our honor that we have installation and commissioning representatives as well as service teams across Iran for this equipment, and we are actively working in this field. And most interestingly and importantly, some of the devices we first built nearly 27 or 28 years ago are still operational and used at certain centers. This is our pride, a source of happiness, and it gives us the strength to work with even greater determination. Currently, we are also producing research equipment, as I mentioned, such as the A1 cell culture incubator used for producing drugs like clotting factors and insulin. In pharmaceutical centers, such as Daru Heshmi, for the first time in Iran, we manufactured and delivered our device to them, and it is being used. Other pharmaceutical centers also use our equipment, including our minus 80 degrees centigrade ultra-low temperature freezer. For the first time, and in response to the country's needs, we even designed it with two separate refrigeration cycles. Due to the servicing challenges in our country and the device's reliance on high technology, we innovated by using two independent systems for the first time. This ensures that if one cycle fails, the other continues to operate fully, preventing any damage to the valuable blood products or research materials. This is a distinct advantage over similar foreign devices. Of course, this approach is more costly for us, but given the operational conditions and our commitment to localization, it stands as a positive achievement for Danish Pajuhan Company and a source of pride for our work in this field. Furthermore, in the production of the cell culture device, it is worth noting that there are no more than three or four companies worldwide that manufacture this equipment. One of them is Danish Pajuhanefaj Company. We are proud to have produced this device, and it is now being utilized in pharmaceutical centers.
What you just heard was just part of Safaj Company, the path of turning an idea into a series of national and international achievements. The CEO clearly explained how the company managed to find its special place in Iran's biomedical industry through innovation and indigenous knowledge. But the important question is, what is Plasma Factor 8 and what is its significance?
Plasma, the golden yellow component of blood, is rich with vital proteins. Among these proteins, factor 8 plays a pivotal role in the blood clotting process, and its absence puts hemophilia patients at risk of dangerous bleeding. The production cycle of factor 8 from plasma begins with collecting plasma from healthy donors. The samples undergo rigorous virological and safety screening to ensure their initial safety. Then, using advanced separation methods, the various plasma proteins are isolated. At this stage, factor 8 is extracted as cryoprecipitate and purified using modern chromatography technology. To make the product safe, viral inactivation processes are carried out, including nanofiltration and controlled heat treatment, which guarantee that the final medication is free from pathogens. In the end, the purified factor 8 is packaged as a lyophilized powder or a ready-to-use solution. Each vial with a specific dosage is prepared for injection into patients with hemophilia A.
In the research and development R&D unit of our company, we have strived to develop and manufacture equipment for the country under the banner of Danish Pejuhan Company to support the pharmaceutical sector and the storage of plasma and blood products nationwide. The device you see in the image is a blast device, a plasma freezer. It can reduce the temperature of plasma from approximately plus 50 degrees Celsius down to minus 50 degrees Celsius in under an hour, typically within 45 minutes. This unit features four shelves. Each shelf can hold six plasma units, totaling 24 units. Therefore, 24 plasma units can reach minus 50 degrees Celsius in less than 1 hour. Every component of this device has been planned and manufactured by the company's engineers. This includes the refrigeration systems, the electronic systems, and the embedded software programming. The data loggers you see in the image are also entirely built by Danish Pejuhan Company and Iranian engineers. As you can observe, all temperature data and device information are logged. You can extract graphs from it. Temperature graphs are displayed. It has a USB port for downloading data in formats like PDF and Excel, for viewing graphs, and also for monitoring device alarms. All device alarms are displayed in real time on the unit itself. This device is the Danish Pejuhan Company's minus 80 degrees Celsius freezer. This single-door freezer features a dual independent refrigeration system, two separate cooling circuits. It can bring the internal temperature down to minus 80 degrees Celsius. This device is used in research centers. In biological, biotechnological, and pharmaceutical fields. As you can also observe in this device, it has two independent cooling circuits visible in the image, along with a data logger that monitors the entire system. This system can log temperature data for up to 2 years and store up to 8,000 alarm events internally. Look here, it shows an error, for example, a sensor fault in a cooling circuit. These are tests conducted by our own team. You can see everything here, upper and lower temperature limits, and all other parameters. This also has a USB port for Excel output. This device is the plasma recover, which can lower the plasma temperature from positive 25 degrees, which is room temperature, to negative 25 degrees in a period of 3 hours. 4 completely independent chambers. This means you can place a plasma bag in each chamber. It is designed for plasma volumes from 150 to 200 milliliters and features 4 completely separate doors. The device you see in this image is the A1 cell culture incubator. It was used for producing factor 8 and the COVID-19 vaccine. During the peak of the COVID-19 pandemic in our country, when cases surged, they utilized this very device to manufacture the COVID-19 vaccine domestically. The device operates at 28 degrees Celsius. It features a rolling bottle system. It can culture drugs using the nutrient medium poured into the bottles. These bottles rotate, and at temperatures of 40 degrees Celsius and 24 degrees Celsius, bacteria are introduced into the bottles via filters, which aids in improving the cell culture process.
Our manufacturing process in the factory consists of several units. There is a mechanical unit where the device's body is produced. We have the refrigeration unit, which designs and installs our cooling systems, and the electrical and electronics unit. Of course, before entering production, our design and engineering unit is highly active. It is comprised of university elites from our own country who worked hard here designing the product from scratch. They then hand over the designs to our production units. We have also done reverse engineering. There were devices that were reverse engineered, but we no longer rely on that method. For those devices we did reverse engineer, we have fixed their flaws. Originally, American and European devices, they are now being produced to the highest standards for the Iranian Blood Transfusion Organization nationwide, as well as hospitals across the country. We have had significant achievements in the field of cell culture equipment. We have designed at least 5 distinct products in this area, from design to manufacturing, and they are now operational in various centers across the country. In our field, our annual production volume isn't very high because manufacturing our devices is complex. However, our factory is modern and well-equipped. The machinery and facilities we have are excellent. Similar factories we have seen in Europe and China were not superior to ours. But because these devices have specific complexities, our current annual production quantity is limited. The most important point is that the countries producing these devices have sanctioned us and refused to sell them to us. Yet, we have managed not only to design and produce these devices, but also to improve upon them. We can supply them to all centers in need across the country. This is a very positive point, and we are proud to be serving our nation in this capacity.
That's all for today. Another story of innovation and inspiration unfolded. Thank you. Be sure to tune in again for other interesting stories. Until next time, take care.
المدينة back, dear listeners, and thank you for staying with us on Iran Radio, broadcasting from the heart of Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. Muslim scholar Ibn al-Haytham, known as al-Hazen in Europe, who was born in 965 AD, formulated the scientific method and has been referred to as the world's first true scientist. He is also often regarded as the first theoretical physicist, making a significant contribution to the theory of light and optics. Additionally, he developed what is called celestial mechanics, which led to the eventual work of Europeans such as Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes Kepler, and Isaac Newton. We'll listen to the continuation of Iran Radio. Thank you for joining us. Coming up in this hour, we begin with the spotlight. Right after that, we turn to For Humanity, a reflective program that explores key aspects of human life as addressed in the Holy Quran, from personal development to social relationships and family dynamics. This segment offers a Quranic perspective on how to live with purpose and compassion in both private and communal life. Then stay tuned for Africa Today, where we take a comprehensive look at the political, economic, cultural, and business landscape across the African continent. This program provides a valuable overview of developments shaping Africa's present and future. Up next, Spotlight. Stay with us. There is much to explore.
From Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of engineering.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. Now, the U.S. has ignited outrage after seizing a Venezuelan oil tanker and what Crocus has compared to Israel's pattern of unlawful military aggression and resource appropriation, denouncing the move as a blatant act of international piracy, sentiments echoed by a number of countries, including Russia and Iran. This all comes on the heels of nearly 90 people killed in U.S. attacks targeting over two dozen small boats near Venezuelan waters. The Washington claims were involved in the drug trade. And the legality of all this, of this long list of one, the U.S. naval and military buildup in the Pacific and Caribbean near Venezuela over the past couple of months, two, the dozens of people killed in the absence of proof or due process, three, threats by the U.S. president alluding to ground operations into Caracas or his directive to CIA to increase operations in the country, four, Trump closing Venezuelan airspace, and now this highly illegal seizure of the Venezuelan oil tanker. Brings us the $64,000 question we'll put to our guests this evening on our Spotlight program, and that is, what is the U.S. and more specifically, the Trump administration's machinations for the sovereign and proud state of Venezuela? First, here's an update from our reporter, Gladys Quesada, joining us from Caracas. Gladys, good to check in with you. If you're safe and doing well, tell us the latest on the ground with these rising tensions and this seizure of this oil tanker now.
Hi, thanks for this opportunity to tell you what is going on here in Venezuela. First of all, as you were saying last night, the General Authority of the United States, Pam Bondi, announced on Twitter, on X, I beg your pardon, that the U.S. Had seized this oil tanker that belongs to Venezuela, and she was saying that, that those were coordinated actions by the government of the U.S. Afterwards, the President of the United States, Donald Trump, confirmed this announcement, and he said something that confirms one of the denouncers of Venezuela. And he said that they will take the oil and keep it. So that that argument is confirming the denounce by Venezuela before OPEC and other international bodies that the U.S. is trying to seize the Venezuelan assets and the Venezuelan resources regarding oil. And let's recall that Venezuela has the largest oil reserves in the world. Also, I have to say that this attack has optical resonances. Because, for example, not only Venezuela is denouncing this as an act of piracy and as an act of, theft, the Venezuelan government has been saying this, but also Russia has had a response regarding this, and also Cuba and other regional blocs as ALBA CCP. ALBA CCP has condemned these acts and has called for respect of international law and international diplomacy, and also it called for appealing to the legality of international relationships. Also, Cuba gave the total and full political support to Venezuela in this case of aggression and in this case of direct threat and attack against a Venezuelan oil tanker and moreover Venezuela as it all, because we know that since since August, Venezuela has been under the siege and under military threats by the U.S. And also, I want to be more detailed in the Russian response. First of all, because the president of Russia, Vladimir Putin, had a conversation with President Maduro, as the government of Venezuela has been disclosing, and President Putin said that he gives full support to Venezuela. And also, Putin asked why the U.S. is doing this, why the U.S. is conducting this, and was demanding explanations for this kind of actions in international waters against a Venezuelan vessel. Also, the Chancellor, Sergei Lavrov, was saying that Venezuela has the full support of his government. And let's recall that Venezuela and Russia, not only they have a strategic alliance, they have also, in terms of defense, several memorandums of understanding, and they have been pledging, help and solidarity to each other during this kind of sanctions and attacks.
We do have a long program here. I want to cut you off, but thank you for that great reporting there out of Caracas, Gladys Quesada. And now for your guests. Joining us, Diego Sequeira, journalist and political analyst, also from the Venezuelan capital, Caracas. And Gloria La Riva, Latin American expert, joining us from San Francisco, California. Hello, I'd like to welcome you both to the program here. Pleasure to have the both of you on. I guess we'll start there in Northern California with Ms. La Riva. Gloria, pleasure to have you on. Welcome. Your initial take, please, ma'am. You've seen the buildup, the military buildup. You've heard the rhetoric. You've seen the massacres. What does this all spell for you?
This is an absolute act of war, which took place yesterday. The piracy, the theft of the ship, and that was headed toward Cuba. But also, it's not only the beginning of the aggression, the enhanced aggression since August. It's really 26 years of the U.S. trying to overthrow, debilitate, create destabilization against the country of Venezuela for what it represents. Since Hugo Chavez's presidency of 1999, he has represented, and including President Maduro, the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela has expressed its right to share the wealth of its country with all the people of Venezuela, creating 5.5 million homes for the people, sharing the heating oil with the people of the U.S. previously. And now the U.S., unable to use sanctions, overthrow, attempted assassination, now feels that the only option they have is war. And we reject this completely. On Saturday last, over 60 cities of the United States saw protests of the people of the U.S. demanding no war on Venezuela, U.S. hands off Venezuela and its oil and its people.
Thank you, Ms. La Riva. Mr. Diego Sequeira, thank you for your patience. Diego, pleasure to have you on the program. Your opening thoughts as well, please. When you reflect on the past 4 months, U.S. Activity and rhetoric involving Venezuela, what is your assessment of the current state of affairs and the escalation we're seeing in tensions between the two?
Well, we have reached this point basically because all the other tactics of pressure, including especially the psychological ones, are just not succeeding. And you can see it with how daily life in Caracas is going, not only in Caracas, I've been on several places of the country in the last 2 weeks, and it's basically the same. People are far more focused, and this is something I've been saying a long time in several interviews. People are more focused on the holidays. People are more concerned now about the money, making ends meet for